You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All rise. District Court is now in session. Honorable Stephen W. Boyce, Judge for tonight.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. If you give me just a moment, I'm re-logging in on this computer. While I do that, maybe I'll just confirm with the bailiff. We do have each of the 17 jurors have returned. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. All right. At this time, we'll go on the record. We're on case CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. After the Memorial Day weekend, we're concluding with evidence today. The state has witnesses in rebuttal. Before we bring the jurors in, the court would note, had a sidebar with counsel, and an issue has been raised regarding a particular proposed witness of the state. So in order to resolve that issue, the court requested that we take up a motion in limine on the matter and have that argued on the record before determining, number one, if this witness is going to be permitted to testify, and then number two, if so, is there some restriction on the scope of the testimony that could be presented here today. So, Mr. Wixom, I understand this is your proposed witness. Is that correct?
It is, Your Honor.
All right. If you would like to present argument at this time, including a proffer to the court of what you think the proposed testimony may be in the issue regarding admissibility of that evidence, I'll hear your argument, and then I'll hear a response from the defense.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, with respect to Ms. Olson, the state's recollection was we did raise a motion in limine last week relative to relevance and admissibility. The court, in its ruling, did express at least concerns about relevancy, but did ultimately rule that Ms. Olson would be allowed on a very limited purpose to come and provide rebuttal on a statement from Tammy Daybell that her husband wanted her to up her insurance as she was approaching retirement. However, at that time, the state also alerted the court that she had been watching the trial because she had been released as a witness. So we did bring Ms. Olson back down. She is here this morning. I briefly visited with her this morning, and by way of proffer, what I would explain to the court, the state feels very candid. She did explain that she would testify precisely to that statement, that she was having a lunch at the school with Tammy roughly a month before she passed, and that in that lunch, the issue of life insurance was raised, and that Tammy did in fact say, my husband wants me to up my insurance. However, on this occasion, it wasn't included in the report before. Ms. Olson does say that that wasn't just made to her. There was a group of teachers there that they're having a conversation, and that the response when Tammy first made the comment was, well, why are you doing something dangerous or something to that effect? And Tammy responded, no, we get closer to retirement, he wants me to.
Going back, do you know in her proffered statement who was asking Tammy? Who made the inquiry? Was it just somebody that was part of this group, or was it, in fact, Ms. Olson that made the inquiry?
She did not nail that down for me. I can only give the court my impression of what she said. It was more framed as kind of a group question back to Tammy. Now, who the voice of the group was, she did not identify.
Okay, thank you.
And then that's when Tammy made a response that as I get closer to retirement, he wants me to up the insurance. So we understand, Your Honor, that those are those additional facts are new in the sense of being disclosed by the witness. The state takes a position that, frankly, because if the court does allow this witness, we wouldn't want to create any kind of a surprise or issues. We would ask the court and urge the court to consider letting the state simply introduce what has always been disclosed, which is still consistent with what her apparent truth is. And that is that Tammy at a lunch with Ms. Olson, we won't inquire as to whether others were present, raised the issue, my husband wants me to up the insurance. The question was asked to her, well, why? And she said, as I approach retirement, he just wants me to up the insurance. Now, I'm sorry, I need to go back on the proffer. There was one additional thing she said. She did say, and I don't want to speak for her, but given the context of the disclosure she made this morning, she said she'd listened to Emma's testimony. She said that actually, when they all sat down, the ladies did, they all sat down and filled out the life insurance applications together because she says that's kind of the normal sign-up process. So she said everybody did that together. So in fairness, I do have to disclose that that was part of what she told me this morning. The state, nonetheless, is still seeking to call her to simply testify that she had lunch with Tammy. Tammy said, my husband wants me to up the insurance. And upon explanation, he wants me to up it as I approach retirement. Those particulars of the statement have always been disclosed to the defense. That interview occurred in May of 2020 by Detective Mattingly. It was recorded by audio as well as included in a written report. So to that extent, the defense has always had that available to them. We do understand the issues of the additional information, but we feel like that issue can simply be cured by an instruction from Your Honor that we only elicit the very statement that was disclosed originally. We don't believe that any part, the state simply does not believe that Ms. Olson has been tainted or influenced. We believe, frankly, because of her candor and freely giving this information and letting us know that she has been watching the trial and she did listen to Emma's testimony, that she's being very forthright about it. So the state does believe under, I believe, 615, the court does have discretion to allow this in. We recognize the concern, but we do not believe that she's been tainted. And to the extent there has been any potential for taint, we feel like eliminating instruction from the court to the state not to elicit additional testimony would avoid any potential negative influence or prejudice that could be derived back against the defense. So that is what we are asking today, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Wixom, I guess one more question I have. When you say she's been watching the proceedings here in the trial, we had that motion in limine hearing. Do you know if she watched the previous motion in limine hearing that discussed her own potential testimony and whether that's part of what she's already observed?
I certainly just can't speak to whether she watched that portion. She just said after she testified, she had began watching. I will let the court know. I know that in my preparation of her last time, because I didn't want to run afoul of your order, I explained to her that the court had ruled that told her she could not get into that testimony. So she was at least made aware of the court's ruling prior to her testimony so we could comply with the court's order.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wixom. What's the response from the defense then on the motion in limine regarding whether or not Ms. Olson should be permitted to testify about the comment on raising life insurance?
And Judge, permission to remain seated?
You may.
Judge, this is my concern. The court ruled previously that Ms. Olson, even though she'd been excluded, would be allowed to come back, and Mr. Wixom had an opportunity to discuss the case with Ms. Olson and elicited what he felt was new or information that they wanted to come back and provide to the jury. Then over a four-day weekend, Mr. Wixom then preps the witness again, and suddenly the dynamic of what she said is changing. We had other people there. All of these other facts that are suddenly being elicited from her, Judge, causes me some pause, and I'd like to renew my motion to exclude her. There are too many uncertainties here. We don't know how much Ms. Wixom saw. We do know now that after viewing Emma Murray's testimony, the light suddenly came on. And now she suddenly recalls that, oh, there were a bunch of us there for lunch. And that only happened, Judge, after she realized Ms. Murray had testified and contradicted what she said. Judge, there are a number of red flags here. And if the court's going to allow this to go on, we don't know what else she would say. And the court brought up a point that I wanted to make as well, is what part of the motion in limine before did she view? It's bad enough that she viewed all of Emma's. It's bad enough that she observed the entire trial up until Mr. Wixom stopped her. It's bad enough that he's interviewed her and prepped her at least two times now. And each time, magically, she seems to change her testimony and modify her testimony. And it's not modifying her testimony in any way that would aid the defense, Judge. Ironically enough, both times the testimony changed to help the state. It's shocking. You know, additional interviews and suddenly, unless there's other things that Mr. Wixom didn't provide to us. One other thing, Judge, is her statement is very clear. It isn't about before I retire. It isn't about at approximately, you know, about retirement. Her statement is very clear. My husband thinks I should up my insurance before I retire. That's her statement. Before I retire. And now we're adding all of these other uncertainties to this thing, judging, quite frankly, it's extremely prejudicial. So I'm going to renew my motion to strike. And at the very least, Judge, the additional statements should, at the very least, be struck as well.
All right, Mr. Wixom, response from the state, please.
Just briefly, Your Honor. Judge, I don't mean any slight to Mr. Pryor. I don't appreciate his innuendo or suggestion that perhaps I've done anything to influence this witness. I haven't. And in fact, that's why I candidly told him about the new information before we had this proceeding. It's why I asked for a sidebar and articulated to the court the very additional information that was provided. What I never did get from Ms. Olson was any indication that Mr. Pryor in the last 4 years has ever done anything to contact her or talk to her. Certainly hasn't done it in the last 2 months and certainly hasn't done it in the last 4 days. So I don't think there was anything that prohibited Mr. Pryor from reaching out and having his own conversation with a witness to discuss potential testimony. That said, I do think she was very candid with what she said. She didn't try to hide it. And we're not asking, we see the issue that the defense has about the additional pieces of testimony. We recognize that. But we're not asking, Your Honor, to put that in front of the jury. We're simply asking to put the pieces of information that have always been disclosed. And frankly, Judge, there has never been any proposed change to testimony that the state has offered this court up until this morning. We have always maintained that we wish to introduce the evidence as it was included in the recorded audio interview and report that had been provided to Mr. Pryor since 2020. We've never suggested any alteration of what she would say until this morning when she gave us these new facts. That said, Judge, I think the court has a clear picture. We certainly have not done anything to try to intentionally influence this witness. We've done nothing but try to be candid with the court and with the defense counsel. And that's all that we have.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, I've considered this motion in limine as it relates to the state's intent to recall witness Janice Olson in the rebuttal stage of these proceedings. A couple of points. First of all, I certainly do appreciate the candor of the state in bringing the matter to the court before the witness takes the stand in a sidebar to identify the issues that raised concern for the court to determine here outside of the presence of the jurors. I would also echo what Mr. Wixom started with there at the end of his or beginning of his second argument that I don't find anything improper that has occurred with the state improperly coaching a witness or providing some sort of feeding of answers to the witness, nor do I find anything that would make me question the veracity or truthfulness of Ms. Olson, who's already previously testified in this matter. The point I have to focus on at this point is a couple of things. First, I've had an ongoing concern about this statement, whether or not it passes the relevancy standards under rules 401 and 403 in the statement of talking about Tammy Daybell making a comment that the defendant requested she look at upping her life insurance before retirement. There wasn't any real context in the trial about facts of when she was planning on retiring, that was any time in the near future, that she had only worked at that job a couple of years. So I've had that concern. The other concerns that were brought up and were previously litigated in another motion involving hearsay and other issues, I've considered. The part here that causes me greater concern are these what are called additional facts in the statement, and the fact that in particular the testimony now, what we know she would say if allowed is that there was a group of people present for this conversation. And if that was the statement, and that information had been relayed to the defense before trial at some point, that would provide an opportunity to either corroborate or impeach that testimony by potentially figuring out, well, who else was there, who was listening to this statement? Does another witness say, yes, this conversation occurred, or no, it did not occur? And so the request now that her testimony be limited to what is essentially a limited context, when I think the context matters and is important, is concerning, because at this stage in the proceedings, that simply leaves the defense with no opportunity to go in and verify or corroborate who else was at the table. And in addition, there was another newer statement about the timing of retirement potentially, which hasn't been raised or brought up until today. And again, that goes directly to that relevancy issue and what weight the jurors may give the statement, and is also another fact that the defense would not have had an opportunity to previously look at, even though the discovery may have included that she would be called, that the defense potentially had an opportunity to interview her before trial. The reality is, in the first motion limine, we had a specific narrow statement that was proposed to be offered, and that's now been expanded in both who heard it and the facts that would come along with it. So I think that the proposal that I just limit that testimony down does not necessarily, number one, provide the jury with an adequate true context of what happened here because of that limitation. And number two, I think in rebuttal here, where she's already testified, is just unfair to the defense without an opportunity now to challenge who else may have been present for this conversation, and was that accurately recalled by the witness, or does anyone else recall that discussion taking place? So for those reasons, upon considering the motion in limine, under Rule 615, I am going to exclude Janice Olson from further testifying in the state's rebuttal evidence here at this time, having considered all that, including the testimony of Emma Murray as well, which did open the door for this, but I think the expanded scope of where this could go is problematic at this stage. So in the court's discretion, I'm going to disallow the testimony of the witness. Any questions on that ruling, Mr. Pryor?
No questions, Judge.
Mr. Wixom, any questions on the court's ruling?
No question, Judge. And certainly the state accepts the court's ruling, but we would just, unless I heard the misunderstood the court, she has always maintained the issue of the retirement being her reason. So I just wanted to note that, but we understand the court's ruling.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Wixom. So thanks for allowing time to take that up. We'll now, I believe, get the jurors brought in if they're ready, and we'll start. So who will the state be calling as a witness at this time?
Dr. Christensen.
Okay. Thank you. And that's your witness, Ms. Blake?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
All right, please. Here's our present counter for Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. Okay, we are on the record on KCR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell, after the Memorial Day weekend. Continuing with the state's rebuttal. At this time, the court would note the jurors, all 17 have returned, and each has signed their juror affirmation that they followed the court's admonishing instruction as we broke for the weekend. So thank you again for continuing to follow that instruction each time we have a recess. At this time, then, the state is continuing to present witnesses in rebuttal. Ms. Blake, if you'd like to call your next witness, you may.
The state would call Dr. Eric Christensen.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Blake, you may inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Would you please remind the jury who you are?
Yes, Eric Christensen. I'm the recently retired chief medical examiner from the state of Utah.
And Dr. Christensen, have you been watching any portions of this trial with the exception of Dr. Raven's testimony?
No, and I haven't watched that. I've just read the transcript.
And outside of that, you have not heard the other testimony presented. Is that correct?
I have not.
How long did you work at the Utah Medical Examiner's Office?
15 and a half years.
And Dr. Christensen, when you are looking at an autopsy, are you looking at more than just the autopsy itself in order to reach a conclusion as to a cause and manner of death?
Yes, that's a routine part of what we do, is not just the autopsy itself, but the evaluation of any tests that we order, as well as a review of whatever history we can find that will help us sort things out.
And why do you do that?
It's essentially information gathering. I think I may have said when I was here last that I don't have the ability to sit down and talk with my patients and ask them, what's going on with you? What happened with you? And so all of that sort of information for me comes from other sources. It can be from medical records. It can be from interviews with people that knew them. It can be, any number of things. And so we gather all that other kind of information in an attempt to understand what's going on with that person.
And you talk, you mentioned that your patient can't talk to you.
Yes.
Do you recall making that statement? Would that be similar to when somebody goes into the doctor and fills out a medical history?
Yes. I mean, when you go see your doctor, they ask you questions about what's going on with you before they decide on a course of treatment with you. That history gathering, those papers they always make you fill out before you go in or send you ahead of time and all those kind of things, that's information gathering, similar to what we do in our context, just we don't have the ability to get it directly from the patient.
And when you're gathering that information, is it because you've already formed a conclusion and you're simply trying to find information to back it up?
No.
Is it the opposite?
Yes, it's an attempt to basically find as much information as we can that will be relevant to why this person died, and then sorting that problem out.
And then turning to Tammy Daybell, do you recall the autopsy on Tammy Daybell?
Yes.
And as part of your involvement in the case, did you review other documents?
Yes.
Did those documents include medical records?
They did.
Generally speaking, if you're doing an autopsy where the cause of death is not immediately apparent, do you generally request medical records?
Yes. That's a fairly routine part of what we do.
And again, is that to provide you that background information to help informing your conclusion?
Yes.
And in this case, do you recall receiving multiple additional reports from law enforcement?
Yes, we did.
And at some point, did you review those?
Yes.
And did you at some point also create a list, or did the Office of the Medical Examiner keep some kind of a list of all those documents reviewed?
Yes.
And did those include reports from the coroner and or interviews of the coroner from Fremont County?
Both.
And also the deputy coroner?
Yes.
The officer that arrived on scene of Tammy's death?
Yes.
Did you also review reports regarding an attempted shooting?
Yes.
Did you review multiple reports involving people providing some background information about Tammy?
Yes.
Did that include background information regarding her health?
Some of them commented on that, yes.
And when we talk about those medical records, do you recall which medical records you reviewed?
We reviewed records from the Teton Clinic, as well as from Seasons Medical. And then we also were able to get records from a clinic in Springville, Utah, where she had been seen before relocating to Idaho.
And at some point, have you also had an opportunity to review a report prepared by Dr. Raven?
Yes.
Did you see in that report her list of documents she reviewed?
Yes.
Is it fair to say that it was much smaller than the list you reviewed?
Overall,
yes, there was a lot less. We reviewed a lot more than what was on her list.
Did you also note that she made no indication of reviewing medical records?
Yeah, there was no list of medical records in the report that I saw.
And in her report, she'd reached a conclusion.
She did.
In your review of her report and just looking at what she looked at, if you hadn't had the additional information, would you have maybe reached her same conclusion?
Certainly possible, yes.
And again, is that exactly why you request the additional documentation, so that you can make an informed decision?
Yes, it changes the when you are dealing with multiple possible causes of death, you're looking for information that will help you either increase or decrease the likelihood of any one of those possibilities. And so, yeah, that additional information gathering is aimed at that endeavor.
And again, that additional information is not to confirm a decision you've already made. Is that correct?
No.
It's simply to provide you necessary information.
Yes.
And when we talk about Tammy's autopsy, again, can you talk us through when you start that autopsy, what external injuries, if any, did you observe?
The only injuries she had that were externally visible were a few bruises on her upper arms and one on her chest.
So again, is it fair to say when you first observed Tammy, the cause of death is not readily apparent?
That's correct.
And then when you performed the actual autopsy, can you remind us internally what you observed as far as her organs?
Yeah, essentially normal organs, normal brain, normal heart, significant pathology in any of her organs.
Do you recall observing something called pulmonary edema?
Yes.
And can you again explain what that is for the jurors?
Yeah, pulmonary edema is simply buildup of fluid within the lungs. Fluid leaks out of the alveolar capillaries, the little small vessels that are involved in exchanging air into the blood in the lungs. As a result of a variety of different processes, that fluid can leak out of those capillaries and start filling the air spaces, and then mixes with the proteins and things that are already in those spaces and creates a foamy froth.
So as you're doing the internal autopsy, was a cause of death readily apparent at that point?
No.
Based on what you observed, what did you determine were possible causes of death?
So in any case where you have essentially no significant findings, she had pulmonary edema, was really it, then we are looking at a fairly short list of possible causes of death. Those include cardiac arrhythmias that are not related to structural problems in the heart, include seizures, includes asphyxial deaths of all kinds. It would include drug intoxication, And those are probably the big four categories of things with no anatomic cause evident.
So if we break those down a little bit, can you remind everyone what you did in relation to the potential toxicology or poison overdose, looking into that?
Sure. We initially started with a fairly broad panel of toxicology testing.
Judge, I'm going to object at this point. It's becoming cumulative and not related to presentation of the defense.
On cumulative, Ms. Blake, is this distinguishing from testimony already proffered in the first time he's testified?
Just going over it to remind the jurors, I think in a trial of this length, generally, it's not necessarily considered cumulative to review some of the information.
And Judge, that's a walking response. It's cumulative.
Well, at this point, Ms. Blake, I will ask you to just maintain the scope to what's proper on rebuttal at this time and not, I will sustain a cumulative objection if it's simply the repetition of testimony previously offered.
And if I may respond briefly.
Go ahead.
For purposes of rebuttal, I think Dr. Raven did come in. She presented that she made findings. We went over what she did and didn't review. So I think reviewing with the medical examiner what he went through is proper for rebuttal.
Okay. Well, again, I'll at this point sustain that objection. If you'd like to continue, I'll just keep an eye on that. If you could keep the scope to rebuttal, please.
Toxicology tests were in fact conducted, correct?
Yes.
Based on those, did you find it likely that Tammy would have died of anything related to toxicology issues?
No.
And then what is another cause that can that you would look into?
Seizures was also something we assessed.
And again, you reviewed Tammy's medical records, is that right?
Yes.
Any notations or signs of a prior history of seizures?
No.
Did you ultimately determine seizures was a likely cause of Tammy's death?
No, it was not a likely cause.
And then you said a cardiac arrhythmia?
Yes.
Similarly, did you look at Tammy's heart?
Yes.
Any signs of irregularities?
Her heart was structurally normal.
Given her age, medical records, and your review of everything, did you determine that a cardiac arrhythmia was a likely cause of death?
It was not.
And what did that leave you with?
That left asphyxial causes, essentially, at that point.
Did you see any indications in Tammy's medical records of any negative interaction of any drugs and or homeopathic medication she may have been using?
Judge, again, it's cumulative.
Overruled.
Are you aware or did you learn that Tammy was taking an antidepressant?
Yes.
Did you see any signs or indication that the antidepressant played a role in her death?
No.
Did you see any sign or indication that sleep apnea may have played a role in her death?
No.
Did you see anything in her medical records regarding sleep apnea?
Not that I recall, no.
Would sleep apnea generally be something that you would be concerned about causing a sudden death for someone?
When it does, it certainly can be associated with sudden death, but generally speaking, that is in the setting of someone who has significant additional comorbidities, usually significant obesity and underlying heart disease.
In reviewing Tammy's medical records and performing the autopsy, was Tammy obese?
No.
Are you familiar with, I may say this term wrong, but colloidal silver?
Colloidal silver, yes.
Colloidal silver. Any indication that played a role in Tammy's death?
No.
And we talked about ultimately the cause of death being determined to be asphyxiation.
Yes.
When you are looking at the manner of death, how many potential manners do you consider?
There are generally five. A death can be ruled for manner, can be ruled a natural death, an accident, a suicide, a homicide, or undetermined.
In this case, did you see any indication that made you, that led you to believe the asphyxiation was natural?
No.
Did you see any sign or indication that led you to believe the asphyxiation was accidental?
No.
Did you see any sign or indication to lead you to believe the death was suicide?
No.
So the two categories left would be homicide and undetermined. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is it fair to say undetermined is a category if two or more of the other four are still on the table?
Yes. Generally, we will use undetermined. The most common scenario where we encounter that is overdose deaths, where someone, for example, has a history of abusing medication, but also has a history of depression and maybe even prior overdose attempts, and then they're dead of an overdose that is related to something that they routinely abuse. In the absence of a note or something else like that, it's very difficult to determine, to distinguish whether that overdose was intentional or not. And so we use undetermined as manner for those kinds of things.
And in your experience with the autopsies you've conducted and the death certificates you've signed off on, at some point have you used all of those different manners on different death certificates?
Yes.
So is it fair to say in this case, you weren't starting with the conclusion that it was homicide and working backwards?
No.
Was it the opposite direction?
Yes.
Once you determined that the other three manners were not likely, that left you with which one?
Homicide or undetermined, but there was really nothing to compete with homicide. And so undetermined was taken off the table.
In your review of Dr. Raven's report and testimony, and the questioning here today and through the trial, has your opinion as to the cause of death changed?
No.
Has your opinion as to the manner of death changed?
No.
And what did you determine the cause of death to be?
Asphyxia.
And the manner of death?
Homicide.
I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Mr. Pryor Cross.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Dr. Christensen.
Good morning.
I'd like to go procedurally through the process of what you performed in this particular case, if we could.
Sure.
At some point, you were present for the exhumation of Tammy Daybell. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And then within the same day, you performed an autopsy. Is that correct?
Yes.
You did your analysis of that autopsy, made your findings at that point. Is that correct?
Not on that day, no.
Okay. You drew some medical conclusions about items that you would cross off your list. Would that be fair at that time?
We had some initial information, but not enough to exclude anything at that point.
What initial information did you have?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, you said you had initial information. Is that at the time of the autopsy or was that before the autopsy?
Yes, at the time of the autopsy, that's what I meant.
So then at the conclusion of the autopsy and on the same day that they reburied Tammy Daybell, at that point, you started requesting additional information from law enforcement. Would that be fair?
Yes.
And do you recall specifically what you asked for law enforcement in terms of what you requested at that point?
I don't recall specifically, no.
A lot of items.
Yes, we received ultimately a lot of items.
And let me ask you, have you ever heard the expression confirmatory bias?
Confirmation bias, yes.
Okay. I've heard that. Well, I guess I'm using it in a psychology context, confirmation bias. And isn't it true confirmation bias is a situation in which you have science and you're examining a...
Objection, Your Honor. Counsel's testifying. Move to strike.
Overruled.
Confirmation bias, isn't it true confirmation bias is a situation where you're given a certain number of facts and then you go outside those facts to get collateral information that may or may not influence your decision. Would you agree with that?
Not exactly, no. I mean, confirmation bias to me, my understanding of that concept is that you, at some point along a process of making a decision, you have information, you come to a conclusion, and then you essentially evaluate all subsequent information in light of that initial conclusion, both looking selectively for things that support your opinion and rejecting things that don't conform to that opinion.
Okay. So at some point you requested a number of items from law enforcement, is that right? After you did the autopsy, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then you mentioned that you reviewed, I think, Teton Medical, do you recall that?
Yes.
Seasons Medical?
Yes.
And then a small amount of medical on Springville, right?
Correct.
There wasn't much there, correct?
No, I don't believe so.
And when we talk about the amount of information provided to you from law enforcement, it was significant, wasn't it?
It was a lot of information, yes.
Do you have any idea approximately how much time it spent to go through all that information that you were provided by law enforcement?
I would guess multiple hours, but I don't have an exact number.
Okay. And at some point, you hadn't made a decision at this point. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And at this point, you didn't have anything specifically in your evaluation that caused you to go away from either undetermined or asphyxia homicide, correct? That's where you were at the end?
At the end, our final discussion was around the deciding between undetermined or homicidal asphyxia.
Okay. And at that point, based on your review of all of the law enforcement reports and everything that the police officers have provided to you, you decided to lean towards homicide. Is that right?
We made a decision that this we would rule this a homicide, yes.
As part of your review of this case, did you talk to Chad's daughter, Emma Murray?
No.
Did you talk to Chad's daughter, Leah? Did you talk to Chad's son, Garth?
No.
Did you talk to Chad's son, Mark?
No.
Did you talk to Chad's son, Seth?
No.
Did you talk to Chad's mom or dad?
No.
Okay. So you got information from law enforcement, is that correct?
Yes.
But you didn't go back and look at anything provided to you from the family to give you some concept of what potentially the family history or medical was, correct?
Nothing was provided to me from the family.
Well, nothing was provided, but you didn't ask, right?
I did not.
Your Honor, argumentative.
Overruled.
You didn't ask, did you?
I did not.
And you specifically asked the police officers to provide you information about this case. Is that right?
Your Honor, asked and answered multiple times.
Sustained.
After you provided this exhaustive list of police reports that they provided to you, at what specific date did you make your determination?
I don't know specifically when it was. It was sometime in the days immediately preceding when we signed the report, but I don't recall specifically which of those days.
Would it be fair to say that it was 14, 15 months later that you finally signed the report?
I believe that's about the right timeline, yes, 13, 14 months.
So after 14 or 15 months of looking at this, you then made the decision that you came to the conclusion you did. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I want to go back to the autopsy, and obviously, I'm not a medical examiner, but when I read the autopsy, I noted that you didn't make any note of the inflammation that was occurring in Tammy's lungs. Is there a reason why you didn't bring that up?
Because there's no significant inflammation in her lungs.
And you made the determination that it wasn't significant, correct?
That's correct.
So we don't know what the level of the inflammation was at the time that Tammy Daybell died, right?
Objection, Your Honor. Counsel's testifying misstates prior testimony. Move to strike.
Sustain. We'll strike the question.
Do you know the level of inflammation that was in Tammy Daybell's lung at the time of her death?
I know it was in her lungs at the time I looked at them from the time of autopsy, which would be expected to be reflective of that.
All right. And if there's inflammation in the lungs, that would be a reasonable explanation for why we had potential fluids in the lungs, would it not?
There was not sufficient inflammation in her lungs to account for the pulmonary edema that was present.
Okay. And at no time when you testified the first time, did you mention the fact that there was inflammation in Tammy Daybell's lungs, did you?
No. And there, do you want further response?
Well, you can if you'd like. Go ahead.
There's inflammation. Inflammatory cells are a normal constituent of lungs, even normal healthy lungs. It's normal for there to be inflammatory cells there. In small numbers, they're there basically to do the job of what inflammatory cells do, fight intruders and deal with infections. And there was no significant increase in the amount of inflammatory cells present in her lung.
Okay, so if there's no, if it's part and parcel of a normal lung, then wouldn't the response in the autopsy say that it was a normal lung?
I would expect so, yes.
Yeah, and instead, in the autopsy, you talked about inflammation in the lung. So this wasn't part and parcel of just a little inflammation. There was inflammation in the lungs, wasn't there?
I would have to review them. I don't recall at this point.
And Judge, could I have a moment, please?
You may.
Thank you. So I previously discussed with you that on the very first time you testified, you didn't mention anything about inflammation in the lungs. Is that right?
Not that I recall.
All right. And then today, when the prosecutor called you back after the defense has rested their case as a rebuttal witness.
Objection, Your Honor. That's a narrative. Move to strike.
Sustained.
Second time you're called back, questioned by the prosecutor. Again, no discussion about inflammation of the lungs.
Correct? Your Honor, argumentative, ask and answered. Move to strike.
Overruled.
Second time you're back. Again, no discussion about inflammation in the lungs. Correct?
Correct.
And then only after the defense attorney gets up here and questions it does the subject come up. Is that right?
Yes.
Nothing else.
All right, Ms. Blake, redirect.
Dr. Christensen, have you testified before?
Yes.
And are you familiar with court proceedings that the state brings people back as rebuttal witnesses?
Yes.
So have you testified in that capacity before?
A couple of times, yes.
Counsel just went over inflammation in the lungs pretty in depth. Again, was there any indication that inflammation of Tammy's lungs caused her death?
No.
I think you said there was no significant or there was no signs of inflammation that would have caused the pulmonary edema.
That's my recollection.
And you considered the possible causes of death given essentially a negative autopsy.
Yes.
In your role as a medical examiner in Utah, do you generally request reports if the cause of death is not readily apparent?
Yes.
And is that exactly what you did in this case?
Yes.
So nothing about this was different than what you would normally do as far as information gathering?
In terms of the gathering, no. The volume was certainly different, but what we request is not different. There was just a lot more generated in this case.
And in reviewing the reports provided by law enforcement, were there any reports where Chad's kids had agreed to speak with law enforcement and provide information?
Not that I recall.
Would it surprise you to learn that they refused?
Judge, I'm going to object. Hearsay.
Overruled.
Would it surprise you to learn that they refused to speak with law enforcement?
I don't know if it would surprise me or not. I mean, certainly they're right not to talk to law enforcement. But.
And if you had been provided reports that included statements from the kids, would you have reviewed them?
Absolutely.
And if none were provided, would it surprise you to learn it's because they don't exist?
No.
And again, when you're requesting that additional information, is it because you've already made a decision and you're simply trying to support it?
No.
And in fact, is it the opposite?
Yes. We gather information to help us make a decision.
And is that what you did in this case?
It is.
And again, based on the information you gathered, and the autopsy, anything about questions today or other information that would cause you to change your opinion?
No.
And again, your opinion on the manner of death?
Manner of death was homicide.
I have no further questions.
Judge, right. I have additional questions.
What topic?
Kids, no reports.
Your Honor, that was well within the scope.
That was within the scope. It was brought up on cross, so I don't see that there was a door open for any recross at this point. So that'll conclude the testimony then of Dr. Christensen. The state can call its next witness.
The state would call David Stubbs.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.